actors in blackface or whiteface do it temporarily, and they're not really trying to deceive anybody. But there's a long tradition of passing, as when light-skinned black people would pretend to be white in life, or Jews would pretend to be Gentile. It happens much less often than it used to, I think, but Kenji Yoshino sees a similar dynamic still at work in a lot of people's lives. Yoshino is a law professor at Yale, and he's written a remarkable book called Covering, which is part memoir and part legal manifesto. When I spoke with Kenji last year, I asked him for his take on the complicated American history of whites acting as blacks and blacks acting as whites.
Well, I'm very much for the colorblind casting ideal. I think that what we see is a kind of tacking in between requiring African-Americans to minstrelize their race and then requiring African-Americans to meld into the white stream as much as possible to show that they can do Shakespeare as well as anybody else. And then finally, this midpoint, which I think is the best place to be, where African-Americans are not pushed in either direction, that they have the freedom to be who they are, that they have the freedom to be people. And when I think about what the contemporary version of this is today, I think it's the gay debates. I'm thinking here of the show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Right.
And this is a kind of minstrelization that pushes the gay person away and renders them safe in one sense because they're enacting a stereotype on a stage. And so, as Judith Butler reminds us, a drag queen on a stage is funny. A drag queen sitting in the audience next to us is not, right?
Although even in the case of Queer Eye, isn't there some presumed social good in having gay men of various degrees of flamboyance, queeniness, swishiness as acceptable figures in middle American homes?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we can look at the kind of dark side of Queer Eye, but there's also an incredibly bright side to it as well.
The title of your book is Covering. How is covering different than the quaint phrase passing?
Covering is really, in my mind, the new passing. So covering is the sociologist Irving Goffman's term for how we tone down identities, and this is a key point, that are already known to other people. So Goffman's killer example is President FDR. He used to always make sure that he was behind a table before his cabinet entered. Now, FDR wasn't passing because everybody knew that he was in a wheelchair, but he was covering, making sure that his more conventionally presidential qualities were at the foreground of his interactions with his cabinet and that his disability was in the background.
There's many great passages in your book. I'd love you to read, if you would, from the book so the listeners can have a sense of what you're saying.
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to do that. As you were good enough to mention, the book does try and meld memoir with argument, so I think I'm just going to focus on the parts that deal with memoir. And the only setup you need for this is that this is my attending the wedding of the woman with whom I had a relationship with in college. So it's called The Blue Star. Janet got the tattoo as she started medical school. She chose the blue star of a Philip Levine poem, in which the star appears on a man's chest, tiny and perfect. The man is a working man who makes a glare for light bulbs, desirous of normalcy. He wants none of it. But after the surgeon cuts it off, he announces to his patient that underneath it is another perfect blue star. Presumably, underneath that one, another. Janet and I fought over the tattoo. I told her she had misconstrued the nature of time. In 30 years, I said, she would be an entirely different person, but the tattoo would still be there to embarrass her. Who was she, at 24, to bind that future self? Janet responded that I was the one who had misconstrued time. She agreed that over the next years, she would change, that she would have to change. Yet she said if her future self was embarrassed by the star, she wanted it to be embarrassed. She was entering a time in her life when her commitment to poetry would become more endangered than ever, and she wanted to protect that commitment by writing it on her body. If she became a doctor who stopped reading and writing poetry, she wanted to hear the reproach of this younger self. My mistake, she said, was that I assumed people got wiser as they got older. So the star is still here on her wedding day. I still dislike tattoos, except for this one, which I love out of mind.
That's Kenji Yoshino reading from his book, Covering. How did such a, as if you forgive my presumption or invidiousness, how did such a beautiful writer become a lawyer?
Well, it's really kind of you to ask that question. I talk about this extremely briefly in my book, but at the time when I was trying to decide whether to go to law school or to an MFA program or graduate school in English literature, that was also exactly the time when I was coming out. And I simply felt that I couldn't be vulnerable both in my person and in my profession.
Uh-huh.
And so I chose law because I thought that this is a language that would be less beautiful, but more potent and more able to protect me.
Have you ever found yourself covering in the sense of not wanting to reveal that you're an academic or a lawyer to somebody?
All the time. Right? Yeah. So, you know, I have increasingly been shifting my time in terms of where I live from New Haven to New York. And one of the wonderful things about writing the book is that it's introduced me to a kind of New York literary scene. And, you know, my first love is really literature. And my senior thesis was a collection of my own poems. And so, you know, I was at a party for the nomination for the National Book Critics Circle Awards. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to leave that room without having said was that I was a law professor. So, you know, so, and the thing is, it's so, again, I think that's a really good example of that was it. That was really my choice. And I wasn't pulling out my violin and saying I'm oppressed because I'm covering this. You know, like I really just made a choice to do that. And if people are doing that with freedom, that's no problem. And that's very different from me worrying about holding, you know, I tell the story in my book where, you know, I'm in the hospital with my then boyfriend and he reaches for my hand because he's actually about to get a diagnosis that could be extremely threatening or life-threatening. And to my shame, this is when I was in my mid-20s, I brushed his hand away because I'm too scared to hold his hand in public. So, I mean, I think those two different kinds of covering help underscore the distinction that you were alluding to earlier, which is the kinds of covering that we want to get rid of socially and the kinds of covering that are always going to be with us and are basically unproblematic.
Kenji Yoshino, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for your questions. They're really terrific.
Kenji Yoshino is a professor at the Yale Law School. His book, Covering, has just come out in paperback.